From WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Today, we're going to tell you one big story from a few different perspectives. It's the story of our relationship with the planet on which we live, what we are doing to the world around us, but also what nature can do for us and what we might be able to achieve if we designed human systems to be more like natural systems. This past week, more than 15,000 scientists issued a warning that human beings in the natural world are on a collision course. It was actually a second notice. In 1992, the Union of Concerned Scientists issued the first World Scientist Warning to humanity. They spelled out human impacts on air, water, oceans, soil, forests, and all other living species. And they called on humanity to slow our growth and moderate our consumption. That document was signed by 1,575 scientists, including more than half of all living Nobel laureates. On the 25th anniversary of that letter, a small international team of scientists revisited those issues and published an analysis of what has changed and what hasn't. They illustrated their results with 9 graphs, including temperature changes, deforestation, and the shrinking number of species on Earth. That's the study that 15,000, not 1,500, 15,000 scientists from around the world signed onto. That number grabbed headlines, but precious few articles about the study actually included those 9 graphs. And who can blame them? A couple of days later, NASA released a very different way of looking at our changing planet. They compiled 2 decades worth of satellite data into a time-lapse animation that really drives home things like deforestation and shrinking ice caps without a single graph. You can find that animation on the Living Lab Radio Facebook page. And joining me now is NASA oceanographer Jeremy Werdell. He's the PACE project scientist. PACE stands for Plankton Aerosol Cloud Ocean Ecosystem Mission. Jeremy, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Video doesn't necessarily come across terribly well on radio. Could you give us a little sense of what you actually see, what this animation looks like?
Absolutely. NASA has a fleet of Earth-observing satellites, and we measure simultaneously land, ocean, atmosphere, and ice. This particular animation represents 20 years of the measurement of life itself on Earth. I find it absolutely mesmerizing. If you stare at it, it's just like watching the Earth breathe. You can see the seasons changing. When you look at land, you have the greens of the forest exploding in spring and summer, retreating in winter. You can see the browns of the deserts and how they change with time. I'm an oceanographer. I spend a lot of time thinking about the offshore water that we don't see from our beaches and shores. There are biological deserts there, too. The animation shows deep purples and blues where the biological deserts exist and they expand and contract. But then you also see the springtime blooms, and these are the rich yellows and greens and reds where, just like looking at your lawn take off in the spring, you're watching the ocean awaken, become very, very productive, fisheries bloom, and all of this is changing with time. So the real power of an animation like this is our senses are expanded way up into space, time is compressed, and you just see the evolution of life on Earth.
It sounds really beautiful and, as you said, mesmerizing to watch these changes over time. But of course, every year is not like the next at this point. Embedded in that 20 years is not just the normal give and take of the seasons, but 20 years of steady change as a result of a lot of human impacts. I mean, I'm assuming you also see things like deforestation, that the total forest area is decreasing. What kind of long-term trends do you see in there?
A couple jump to mind. The first was one of the more initial realizations of looking at this data set back in 1997 when the beginning of this continuous time series started with the CWIS instrument. That was during a El Niño-La Niña transition. And the view from space there was really remarkable. I mean, things that you see in textbooks now, because from the ground, there's no way to wrap your head around the fact that there is a 6,000-kilometer bloom of phytoplankton, these microscopic algae that form the base of the food chain, spreading all of the way across the equatorial Pacific. But other things we've seen, the Arctic is starting to green more and more. And I think we've all felt this. A lot of the trends that we're seeing involve spring coming a lot earlier, fall leaving a lot later, summers being longer, drier, hotter. Since everything is connected, land, ocean, atmosphere, ice, this is where some of the long-term changes we're starting to realize from these data sets.
I'm talking with NASA oceanographer Jeremy Wardell about a new time-lapse animation of 20 years worth of satellite data about our changing planet. Jeremy, one thing that you as an oceanographer will appreciate, but that's really obvious when you look at any satellite image of our planet, like the iconic blue marble photograph, is that, of course, most of the planet is ocean. And you mentioned the seasonal changes that you can see in the ocean that I think we don't really appreciate that much when we live on land. But are there similar long-term changes, like you were saying, whether it's the Arctic getting greener or sea ice melting? Do we see those kinds of changes in the ocean as well?
Yeah, actually, thank you for asking this. It's sometimes hard to reach audiences that are not always in view of the ocean as to why it's important to think about and why it's important to study. And a lot of it boils down to food sources, for example. And so, two of the things that we've been observing have been these big biological deserts in the ocean where they're growing bigger and bigger with time.
And why is that?
Basically, the way this change is occurring is that we have a warmer planet in general. And in these vast deserts that, surround Bermuda, the South Pacific, out in Hawaii, places that you just don't see every day, when you have warming water on top, you create a lens of warm water floating above colder water, where all of the plants and algae, they flourish in the top where there's a lot of sunlight. But they require nutrients, just like all of our land plants, just like our lawn. And all of the really nutrient water is that cold on the bottom. And this boundary, these plankton, these phytoplankton and these nutrients, they don't always cross. And so what's happening is that as you have this warmer water in the stratified system, the species that do really, really well there flourish. The ones that don't like that disappear and move elsewhere. And so in these biological deserts, as our ocean warms and the stratification becomes stronger, while they start to expand and you see less and less production there, you see less and less bloom of algae, and because what normally would produce those blooms can't survive there anymore and was moved on.
I mean, what you're describing sounds like, okay, so some species don't like the warmer conditions and they just go elsewhere. But we've also started hearing in recent years about truly dead zones that can support almost nothing, that as the water gets warmer, it actually holds less oxygen and at some point kind of can't support most life. Is that also part of what you're talking about?
Yeah, and we're starting to see that increase. And it touches on two things as you start thinking, what life like is a little bit more along the productive coast here. And the trends that seem to be emerging are that the species and what grows well in warmer water, when they take off, this is like everything. Too much of a good thing can ultimately be bad. And so what's happening is that there's a lot of production in a lot of coastal waters here as the water warms. Well, like everything, these plants and microscopic algae, they die off. And then bacteria and other processes come in and they start removing oxygen from the water. And as this pattern increases with time, as you mentioned, you are starting to get these dead zones. And the impact of that is, well, nothing wants to live there, but also it changes the way sunlight penetrates into the water. So now you're starting to impact seagrasses and things that grow on the bottom. Well, you start taking the seagrasses away. Well, now you start worrying about chemistry of the seafloor and erosion starts to happen. And now suddenly you're not in the most habitable place for your shellfish and things that live on the bottom. So it's kind of this unpleasant feedback loop, and it gets further complicated by some of these blooms are not necessarily the kind of phytoplankton you want to see there. Not all phytoplankton are created equal. There are many that are beneficial, but there are many that are harmful. And so you're fighting these dead zones, and then you're also fighting the emergence of nuisance phytoplankton blooms. You may have seen harmful algae is a term that appears a lot in the news.
Red tide, that kind of thing.
There are freshwater versions that are killing Lake Erie. And you're seeing this in fisheries in the Northeast as well.
Obviously, one of the benefits of satellite data is that you can look at the entire planet. You can get global data sets. But I wonder also if you kind of zoom in on one region, like maybe New England, a little bit selfish here in my questioning.
No, I get it.
are there specific trends that you see in New England that are distinctly different, perhaps, from what you see on a global scale?
Yeah, actually, in fact, there have been a couple of recent studies that have shown that the Gulf of Maine is warming faster than the global average. It's one of the fastest warming bodies of water on the planet. The air temperature has also risen a little bit faster in Massachusetts over the past 120 years or so, on the order of 2.5 degrees Fahrenheit compared to a 2 degree Fahrenheit global average. So there are some unique things going on in New England relative to the rest of the world.
Are there any positive changes that you can report seeing out of this? I mean, so far we've touched on deforestation, expanding dead zones in the ocean, decreasing Arctic sea ice, rising global temperatures. Is there any good news?
I think the good news varies with where you live in your region. So thinking about like a lobster population, for example, I mean, my understanding is that the lobster industry is, as a whole in New England, doing well, but that it's migrating northward. You know, so if I lived farther north and I saw the lobsters coming towards me, maybe I'm excited about that. If I'm in a part of the region where they've left, I'm not happy at all about this. And some of the things that might be viewed as positive are short-lived. A warmer, wetter environment can, on some scales, help a forest. It's giving the forest a lot of what it needs to grow. But what's difficult in saying that that's an absolute positive is, again, getting back to how everything is connected. The forest might be doing well, but then an earlier spring means that flowers are blooming sooner. The migration of wildlife changes. Deer come in and remove some of the underbrush because they can move into a region sooner. Well, now everything that used that underbrush for protection is vulnerable. The whole landscape is changing. So while you don't want to always say it's doom and gloom, you know, it's hard to look at this and feel comfortable, at least for me, speaking for myself.
What are you hoping that viewers get out of this animation? Is it just about awe and wonder looking at our planet? Or are you hoping that people do get some of these messages about the changes that are happening on our planet on a large scale as a result of human activities?
I'm hoping that they see the changes. What's really amazing about being able to put this kind of data set together is, again, you've somehow expanded your ability to see life by moving your senses all the way to space. And then you're compressing time. And when you put it all together in an animation like this, and I should add that the data are available to anybody who wants them. But when you're looking at an animation like this, you can't help but have awe and wonder. I've been doing this for 20 years, and I still could look at that animation all day, nerding out a little bit.
We're all for nerding out around here.
Yeah. And then if you're looking at it and you watch it again, the changes start to emerge and you start seeing these patterns, and you might be focusing in on some part of the world you've never visited, but you're seeing in the colors, wow, that went from dark blue to red, and I don't know what's making that happen. And ultimately, I think this gets back, you know, for everybody, just to the campfire rule, you know. Leave this place better than you found it.
That's NASA oceanographer Jeremy Wardell. NASA has released a new time-lapse animation of 20 years' worth of imagery of life here on Earth as viewed by satellites. You can find that video on our Facebook page. Jeremy, thanks so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
Up next, it's not just your imagination. We talk about the growing evidence that nature makes us happier, healthier, even more creative.
Even after 1 minute of gazing up at a tall, beautiful stand of trees, people behave in ways that are more generous and more pro-social.
Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.